Blog Talk Radio.
As the tears are falling from my face, with all my fears I long for your embrace. How am I gonna carry on and be the one you leave?
All right, and welcome to another edition of Continue Mission. I am your host, James McCormick, and tonight we have kind of an open mic night, but there's just so much stuff going on. We've got a little bit of talk about the stock market. We're going to do a little bit about the border. We're going to do a little bit about crime, violence, and we're going to talk a little bit about a preacher. He's a father in England, and his name's Calvin Robinson. And with the Church of England, they want to boot him out because he started talking about sin, and he mentioned homosexuality, and it just about caused a ruckus over there. And of course, we had the Queen's death. There's been a lot of vitriol about that, about the Queen's death. You know, we shouldn't celebrate anybody's death. You know, I mean, it just, you know, there are some really bad people that die, you know, but once they die and they're gone, then that's it. You know, when you take pleasure in that, you know, there's kind of a problem with that. It's okay to not feel overwhelmingly sad, but to be so toxic on social media, it's just ridiculous. And there is a major, listen, Twitter is the worst for it. I told you all this last week. But there is a major anti-Iraq war veteran movement. And I've been studying this for about, I've studied a couple of years. And Rich and I have had many talks about it. And, you know, we've talked about people being jealous and all this other stuff. But it is mainly folks that identify themselves with a black flag, you know, on their Twitter account, and they call themselves libertarians. But I know a lot of libertarians, and they don't talk like that. These guys are just, you know, I mean, absolute vitriol. I mean, just attacking people, you know, and telling, you know, one guy had a TikTok show, some guy named Alex, and went after one of the congressmen there in Texas that lost his eye, you know, and said, "You lost your eye for nothing. There was no weapons of mass destruction." And, you know, and it was growing up and watching as a young child how the hippies and the war protesters and those folks, you know, treated the Vietnam veterans. They're just like them. They are 100% like them, and they should receive the scorn of everybody that loves America. I mean, absolutely. If you're listening to him, I would stop listening to him. I would. Alex Stein, that's his name. I just stopped listening to him. Because the stuff that he said, it's one thing to go and question a guy's, you know, he's an elected official. When you, and it was among, it was around a whole bunch of wounded vets from the Wounded Warrior Project. And these were, you know, they were Purple Heart recipients. I knew some of them, okay? And he was just so, he just made such a jackass of himself. It was just, it was so pathetic, so anti-American, so hateful. But, you know, you have your right to be that way. But, hey, we have a right to not watch your show, to not click like, and to not give you any money. And that's the best way you deal with people like that. When he was screaming and yelling all of this vitriol about losing your eye for nothing, you guys, your friends died for nothing. I mean, on Twitter, I mean, I had people tell me that, you know. And, you know, and it's always followed by all this false bravado. And so when you do a little bit of research on these folks, what you find is that, A, 100% of the time, they never served in the military. Never. B, they grew up in a wealthy family. C, they are truly cowards looking for a place to belong in society. And really, when I look at these folks and you point that out, it's so obvious because they really get upset. And I was telling Kim and some others, you know, who works with us on this show, that, you know, the biggest cussing I ever got the biggest cussing I ever got was when I said, God bless America and God bless you too. When a guy was just, I mean, he just lost his mind, just absolutely. I mean, it was like I said, it was like you threw holy water on a vampire, lost his mind. Or you question their patriotism, you know, because they don't have a problem questioning mine. They don't have a problem, you know, pointing out the whole weapons of mass destruction, which, by the way, there were over 5,000 unexploded pieces of ordnance over there that did have chemicals in them. Now, was that what we were looking for? I don't know. That wasn't part of my mission. You know, when I went over there, I was there to protect convoys and to make sure that humanitarian supplies, ammunition, fuel made it from point A to point B. And you know what? I did that. We did that. Our whole unit did that. And every night, you know, because I live with zero guilt, folks. None. Zero. You will never make me feel guilty about serving my country or firing my weapon in battle, because I know I didn't kick in doors and shoot little kids. We didn't do that. Okay? That's a big lie. That's stuff that people say. You know what I mean? Now, did incidents happen where soldiers went rogue? Yes. And they were dealt with. They should have been hung for that, in my personal opinion. And you can ask any service member that has any honor and integrity, they would have pulled the lever, because we just don't conduct ourselves like that. You know, and it would be nice if these liberal socialists and whatever these freaks are that are out there would police their own and hold themselves accountable, because they don't. You know, all you have to do is get a cell phone and a YouTube account, and you become an instant rock star. And then all you have to do is just corner somebody, a politician, and start, you know, questioning them. Unless it's a socialist Democrat, you know, like Ocasio-Cortez or Ilhan Omar. Why is nobody questioning them? You know, it's supposedly these conservative guys, and the only ones they're going after are the veterans that are serving in Congress, and there's only about 7% of them that are veterans. Why are they attacking the veterans? Because they have an agenda. They're truly not conservative. Don't believe it. Don't buy it. Don't smoke that dope. Okay? So anyways, that's my little bit of a rant. But it's true. Y'all know it's true. It's true. And I get some hate mail over it. And you know what? I enjoy reading every word, because you know what? Winston Churchill said it best. You've made some people mad. Good. You're making a difference. And that's the way I feel about it. You know, and most of these folks will never, ever, ever mean nothing to you. I mean, just go look on Twitter at some of their handles that they use. They don't even put their real name out there. I mean, there was one on there called the unvaxxed semen. You know, I mean, come on. The widowmaker, you know. And then they're telling me how bad of a person that I am for killing those Iraqis. Let me tell you, nobody that I killed didn't have a weapon. I'm just going to tell you, they all had weapons, every single one of them. And do I feel bad about it? I wish that we could have worked it out a different way. But ultimately, I did my job. And, you know, I'm sorry. I just can't find any guilt. I just cannot find any guilt. And I think it's because, you know, I've given my life to Jesus Christ, and I just don't, you know, I've laid it at the foot of the cross. And but, you know, I didn't lay it there because of guilt. I laid it there because I wanted everybody to understand, especially God to understand, that it wasn't a murderous nature in my heart. It was trying to survive, trying to do the right thing. You know, and sometimes that's a hard thing. And I know these guys, and it's mainly guys, and they're mainly in their late 20s and early 30s. And I think they just wake up one day and they say, you know what, I haven't done anything with my life. I have pretty much been a loser, and depended on my mom and dad to take care of me up until about a year ago, and now here I am. I'm out here. What can I do? Oh, I'll go make a YouTube channel, and I'll go out, and I'll say that I'm a conservative, but I'll attack every conservative veteran congressman or senator out there, and I'm going to leave all the socialists that I'm supposedly be against alone. Or I'll talk about them, but I'll never go and confront them, tell them how worthless they are or how worthless their service to the country is, because they can't do it. Find me the video where anybody talked to Ocasio-Cortez or Ilhan Omar or Nancy Pelosi the way that I saw people talking to this congressman who is a United States Navy SEAL that lost his eye in Afghanistan, by the way. The moron said, you lost it in Iraq for nothing. There was no weapon. And he laughed about it, thought it was funny. How can anyone think that's funny? I would say that if there was ever the lowest form of life, it would probably be that group right there. They are just like the people that spit on the Vietnam veterans when they came home, degraded them for their service, played around, and cowardly avoided their responsibility to this country. And then whenever the veterans come home, they want to shut them down, beat them down, try to show how much bigger, better, and tougher that they are. And I've seen a lot of those hippies get whipped up pretty good. Watch some of the videos. It's actually kind of entertaining because, you know, they talked a lot of trash, and then they got right up in your face, spit in your face, and then when that guy cold cocks you, then it's like, peace, brother, peace. Well, you ask for it, you get it. You sow the wind and you reap the wind, the tornado or whatever it is. I'm going to have to get Father Pagella to tell us that. But anyways, it's just absolutely ridiculous what's going on. And I want for people to understand that, you know, patriotism sometimes means allowing these people to run their mouth in spite of their stupidity. But patriotism does not mean that you put money in their pocket. If you really want to change America and you want to change all this vitriol, you want to change the direction, then shut these people down. Shut them off when you see them. So what? They don't like Dan Crenshaw. You know what? They don't like Tom Cotton. I like both those guys. Okay? Do they always make the greatest decisions? No, but they're human. But the one thing that they have done is serve their country, and they stand up for principles and things that they believe in. And they sacrifice something for it. A whole lot more than what Ilhan Omar, who really probably shouldn't even be allowed to maintain citizenship, let alone be seated in an office like that. That's who they elected in Minnesota. That's who they elected. You mean to tell me that's the best you got, Minnesota? You serious, Minneapolis? Is that the best you got? Then I feel sorry for you. If you was looking for a Muslim, I know a half a dozen Muslims that served our country and that were honorable and that were running. But you chose Ilhan Omar. And just do some research on her and how she got here and the things that she did before she got here. So anyways, have a good show tonight. I promise you that. And I hope some of them trolls call on. I really do, because I'll let you on this radio show. And I will. But you're gonna hear both sides of it. And if you don't hear both sides of it, then, you know, you're just going to run your mouth on the radio, and then we'll shut you down, and then you'll just sit in your house and you'll scream at the walls. But especially you men out there, quote-unquote men out there, that are out there talking all this mean, bad trash out there, don't be upset. When you get up in somebody's face and you invade their personal space and they cold cock you because you had it coming. That's all I'm going to say about that. And you come to me with violence and vitriol, you'll get violence and vitriol back. Come to me with a handout in peace, you'll get peace back. That's where we're at with it. All right, so we've got, and you know, it's just the way it is. I've had my gut full of this crap. And I've watched, you know, liberal socialism and darn near communism etch into this society and eat the heart out of America. You know what I mean? And I'm watching people get all twisted and bent out of shape over one or two things, and they're totally ignoring that we're losing our country. They're upset about 50 immigrants going to Martha's Vineyard. Martha's Vineyard, one of the richest places in the country. You can't take care of 50 immigrants that you are wailing and raising the devil with Texas about not handling 2,000 to 3,000 a day. Get the heck down here. You ain't got no room. You got plenty of money. Build them a boat then. Build them a boat and send them someplace else. I don't care what you do, but you got them, and I hope that they keep sending them to you. All right, Father Michael and Richard Kilblain, God bless you all. Thank you for being on here tonight.
Great, great. I just wanted to make one comment. I remember when I was in college, I was called the baby killer because of my Vietnam service. But by the end of that semester, the professor asked the definition of a Christian. And I guess through the way I conducted myself, because I'm very concerned about social discourse in the public square. You know, I teach critical thinking in the college, and I just feel like if we could just exchange ideas rather than being so, vitriolic and hateful. I just think there's a better way of allowing someone to understand a perspective. I appreciate everything you said. Also, I know Rich has some things to share. Because the University of New Mexico, where they basically rioted to shut down free speech. I think we need to address that whole thing. And I have a personal story about being very near the Queen that when we get to that part, I'd like to share when it's appropriate.
Well, okay. Absolutely. Yeah. And Father Mike, being somebody that came back from Vietnam and heard all that stuff. You know, I mean, I watched my dad cry when Saigon fell. You know, I mean, that was a hard thing for me to see as a kid. But to watch the same thing, the same kind of, I don't know what they are. I mean, there's, you know, I know we're supposed to love each other, but I'm telling you, they really stretch that hard because the things that you see and being done right now, and it's targeting the Iraq war veterans. Now, it's going to move to the Afghanistan veterans because they're upset about the withdrawal. So now the attacks
are going on both of them. Even when I went to Fort Bragg 25 years later or whatever, there were some military guys that were, you know, talking badly about being a Vietnam vet. I had some guys when I was at Fort Bragg. I just think they bought the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. They sucked it all the way down, and they were like little kids, you know. They had to stick their fingers down, and they had to get the little bit of sugar that was in the bottom of that thing because they just drank it all. They really did.
Yeah.
And there's just not enough people ignoring them. I mean, honestly, these people are hateful, wish death on. I'm telling you, they wish. I mean, I'm telling you, I had two or three of them said, "I wish you'd drop dead right now," you know. I know how to answer that. I usually just say, well, You know, God will take me home when it's my turn, but you have nothing to do with it, you know.
That's right.
When you mention God, they blow their mind up, but they call themselves conservatives. I think we've been infiltrated by a bunch of liberal socialist communists. You know, I really do. I really believe that, and people are being played like suckers because they're listening to it. Most of the conservative people that I know, the real conservative people, are Christians. They don't beat people down. They don't try to, you know, look, I know what's right and what's wrong, but I don't get in somebody else's business. You mind your business and I'll mind mine. And if you want to know the truth and you ask me, I'm going to tell you the truth. But it has been this constant attack, and it just hit me the other day. I was thinking, why is it that these guys who call themselves, you know, the free men or free women or whatever they're called, I don't know. They're just weird. But they have the most socialist agenda. They really do. I mean, everything that they do is nothing but attack people that are trying to, you know, push capitalism versus socialism. You know, I'm a capitalist kind of guy. I'm not a socialist. You know, I don't believe that our country can sustain the level of socialism that some of these folks want to have. The other thing that I've noticed, and it really hit me hard when we started talking about tearing down the statues, you know, the statues of all the Confederates. Get rid of it. Then it hit me. You get rid of it because it's a constant reminder of the Democratic Party that it was you that stood up the Confederate States of America. It was you and your party that voted against freeing the slaves. It was you and your party that voted against giving them the vote. The history is there. But if you destroy history, there'll be a generation that wakes up and says they didn't do that. They're the party of the people. And I don't believe that at all. I believe that this is a way to whitewash everything so that nobody remembers that there was a General Lee, and there was a Stonewall Jackson, and there was a Nathan Bedford Forrest, and every one of them were registered Democrats as part of the Confederate States of America, every single one of them. And it's frustrating to me that instead of them embracing their history and saying, look how much we've came forward, how much we've changed, instead let's bury it, destroy it, so we don't have to fight that battle ever again, and we can keep people ignorant. That's my feelings on that. What's your thoughts?
Polarized. Rich said you spoke about that last week and counterculture. I have some liberal friends that I've been trying to have dialogue with, and they'll send me things to read. And I have a number of people, and it takes a lot of energy. Rich has talked about this himself. You know, to really start penetrating, because right now there's so much vitriol and hatred, we can't even influence each other. You know, we're just so polarized. And everything you're saying is absolutely true, but I'm just wondering how we get to the place of being civil again. And one of the chapters that I teach in critical thinking, it says at least be civil. I'm ashamed to have to teach that to the students. At least be civil. We're not above that, but, you know, we're mutilating our children. We're aborting our babies. I guess we're really not a civilization. But to be able to really talk as intelligent people and respect the position of each person, we call that more of an iron person argument rather than a straw person argument. But, I mean, in the public square, there's not discourse. I mean, there's just this vitriol, and I don't think we're moving the ball, or we're not moving the needle, because states all the time, an intelligent person, okay, that's your perspective, let me hear you out. Now hear this, you know, like you mentioned about the mistake of saying the person who was in Afghanistan was in Iraq, you know, something simple like that about the weapons of mass destruction. But I'm really concerned. I really believe that they're talking civil war and it's going to come to blows. I mentioned to you, University of New Mexico, this young lady, Tommy, she was giving a lecture and they wanted to come in and harm her. They'd take her out in the armored car. I mean, I tell my students all the time, it's so juvenile. You put your hands on your ears and say, I don't want to hear what you have to say. We no longer have free speech. And what we do have is people hiding behind, the internet where they don't have to confront a person as a human. That's like calling the Vietnamese a gook. So you can dehumanize a person and not have to recognize that they're too made in the image of God.
Mm-hmm.
I got it. As Rich said, you covered that last week, but still, I think that, you know, this is something that we need to address because we're not talking. We're not, it's all about monologue. There's no dialogue.
Yeah.
People say their piece and they're done. We say our piece, but there's no dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. There is no dialogue. There's you can only get cut out so much. And mm-hmm. you know, and I've put up with it for about 4 or 5 years now. And it just got to a point now people are shocked, you know, when you come back with a response. When it used to mm-hmm. be, you know, not much of a response, and the shock shuts them up quicker than anything else. I'm just telling you, just because they're not used to that. They're not used to people responding. When I say they, and let's just, you know, I'm just going to be very.
They want to intimidate. You're right. They want to intimidate.
That's right.
They want to
intimidate
you down. Right.
And mm-hmm. You know, talk trash and sneak around and, you know, do all kinds of stuff that they've done. And finally, you know, you just get to a point where you say, okay, enough is enough. And, you know, they usually go away after that. I mean, they fly away as fast as you can think. I mean, it's been unbelievable how much peace has come in my life. Well, sometimes you got to have your attorney send them a letter. That generally works.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because most of them don't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. And they don't want to get sued. And you got somebody that I've got money set aside that I can sue you if I need to sue you. And I don't want to do that, but I can drop $10K to do that, you know, and it's about the principle of it. And I think that we have far too many liberals and activists that are just shutting down the American patriots. You know, right now, if you call yourself a patriot, they want to put you on the FBI watch list. That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. You know, I'm a patriotic American. I guess you would call me a patriot. You know, but I support the FBI, the CIA, law enforcement. You know, I don't break the law. I don't do those things. I believe in destructive things. But if you're going to tell me that I can't call myself a patriot, then I've got a real problem with that. I have a mm-hmm. big problem with that. I don't know. It just, you know, obviously, for me, it's you know, it's the tipping point for me. And I look forward. I welcome the conversations with these folks. Because, you know, I've had 4 or 5 years of listening to all of this. You know, Father Mike, for a long time, you know, I listen to this and I say, you know, I see your point. I understand how you can't burn down cities. You can't destroy people. You can't dox people. I like that dox, you know. Where they go on the internet and find everything negative, everything bad. And if you can't find it, they go and they file charges or investigations people that are unnecessary, that waste the police's time, that waste the IRS's time, that waste the ethics commission time, and in some cases cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, in the end, you come up with nothing. I think when you come up with nothing, this is my personal opinion, if you've done that, you should be arrested.
You know, when you look at the tactics of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X, I understand your frustration. And I think, like I said, we're totally polarized, and I wouldn't be surprised if there were a civil war because of so much hatred. But I'm just wondering how we disarm, whether it's, you know, writing a white paper, having somebody, like Rich was saying earlier, they don't listen, have somebody listen, and obviously we can't talk to each other, so maybe we can write to each other. But I'm very concerned just how we approach, you know, someone having, and it goes all the way back to Nietzsche, to Michel Foucault, Jean-Paul Sartre, and Karl Marx. These are all things that have been sown into the world, you know, trying to impose your will on other people and so on and so forth. So this is nothing new. I don't think most people understand the heritage and the failure of these specific things. I have a lot of students that want to write papers on socialism and, you know, the restraints of capitalism. And, you know, they have a utopian idea of what it might be. And having seen it being implemented in real life and failing, but irrespective of what system, we are sinful. We have a fallen nature. We have original sin. And irrespective of what system, nothing's going to be perfect. There are better systems than others, obviously. And we've seen capitalism, and I've even did a teaching on the show. Now, unrestrained capitalism, of course, appeals to people's greed. But if you use money to help others, to empower others, to give a hand, not a handout, then you're doing something good. But I'm really concerned that, and I think the politicians are playing this because of the midterms coming up, and they're just causing more hatred. Rich and I had critiqued the president's speech a couple of weeks back, and it really was incendiary. It was starting fires all over the place. There's no peace there, and I'm really concerned about our country, because I just think that we don't know how to talk. And really, you're a well-spoken person, James. You're a well-informed person. And I think I heard someone speaking on the radio, and I couldn't believe how uninformed they were. Sometimes you have to read a book and not just be all into the emotion and the passion and be a little bit logical. And that's the whole thing of classical argumentation. But we have lost that sense, and we've lost our civility. God help us. We've got to restore it. Otherwise, we're going to bite and devour one another, as the scripture says, and be consumed by one another.
Mm-hmm. It is it's very tough to, you know, I'm telling you, you know, there was a time when I was, you know, someone that was in the middle saying, hey, let's try to keep. But I've taken a side now, and I've taken a side because the left side pushed me over there.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these guys and gals who have, like I said, they have infiltrated, and they're just terrible. I mean, they're just terrible human beings. It's unbelievable to me. But it doesn't happen. I really don't think that those that really want this civil war are those on both sides that want it. Most of them have never seen warfare up close and personal, especially.
Right.
They've never had to really lose somebody, you know, in that way, that violent way. And again, I think that this, you know, this bullying is caused by cowards. It's just a bunch of cowards that feel empowered by social media. I tell you, the best thing that could happen to America is to shut down Facebook and Twitter. That's the two. And what's that other one? I can't remember. Anyways, there's another one out there where they shoot videos all the time. It's not TikTok, but it's another one. Well, TikTok is another one, but there's another one too. Anyways, if those would all get shut down for a week.
Instagram.
That's it. Instagram. And if every kid was made to lock their phone up when they go to school and not get it out until they leave, you wouldn't see as much fighting, arguing, cussing, quarreling. I'm telling you, it would not happen to the degree that it's happening right now. Think it could happen. Shut down Facebook. Shut down Twitter. I use both of them all the time, and I try to use them for good means. I do. I love LinkedIn. LinkedIn keeps everything pretty clean. But even there, you're seeing some of this vitriol come in there. And I hope that they wipe it out quick, because we don't want that to turn into another Twitter. Twitter's terrible. It's the worst social media site I've ever seen. You know, I've never seen one like that. Or they made everybody that had a social media account that it had to have your picture and it had to have your name and the city and the state that you live in. I bet you that a lot of that would stop then.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of these people like that anonymity of being able to sit in their basement, eating their mommy's Hot Pockets, and trash-talking people. You know, like I said, the Grim Reaper, that was another one that came after me the other day on Twitter. Grim Reaper, you know, and he was just going on and on and on about all the killing, all the murder and all this stuff. And I stopped him. I said, look, Grim Reaper, because I didn't have anything else to call him, you know. I said, with the guy that's in your business, you talk about all that killing I've done, you know, you should really like me. I really kept you in business for a long time. I gave you a lot of business. According to you, I'm this massive killer, and if you're really the Grim Reaper, I mean, all over his Twitter account, nothing but Grim Reaper, murder, death, kill, all that stuff, you know, and was just going on and on and on against the Iraq war veterans. Not just me, but every single one of us that's, if you served in the armed forces during the Iraq war, whether you was in country or not, according to him, you was guilty of murdering millions of Iraqi citizens who went with this. They have become ignorant and blind to the truth. So, I don't know. Where's Rich at? Is Rich back on? Did he get back on?
No, I've just been sitting here listening to you guys, okay? Yeah. No. Actually, I guess the thing I would like to introduce, since you talked about, you know, the suppression of freedom of speech and college campuses stuff. Father Michael, I thought you had some problems with some of your students challenging you, all right, almost wanting to fight with you over some of your classes. Is that true?
I've had some very arrogant students challenge me, yes. I told you about one person. I said,
right.
Look me in the eye. Don't you ever call me out. Yes, you're correct. But by the end of the semester, he said to me, I like a professor who's a senior who can control a classroom. Who, in other words, I've seen him even on the outside. I was at an event. So, yes, in the beginning, there was that, quote, unquote, even from a female, intimidation. But I didn't back down, nor did I get ugly, but I stood my ground. And by the end of the semester, walked out with this person, and he complimented me on a couple of things. And he was graduating. he had gotten an A every time, but he had taken his course before and got a B, so he wanted to get an A, you know, out of it again. And when I met him, I told him I'd write him a letter, but yes, I got challenged, and like I said to him, look me in the eyes, don't you ever call me out. I got dismissed the class. Yes, I chair with my chair, who had been a Marine, but you're absolutely right.
All right, yeah. All right. As you guys know, I got in a fight with one of my college students today. Yeah.
You see, one of my college students.
So what do you think? What do you think of the fight?
I couldn't see it, Rich. I couldn't open it up.
You could. My gosh. All right, Pajella, Father Michael, did you get to watch it?
Yes. And I just realized that I forgot to tell you I'm watching it now. When I watched it right as soon as you sent it to me. But that student was also a philosophy student of mine. But
right. No. I will tell you. So after we sparred, because he knows you and I are friends, he goes,
yeah,
you know, make sure you tell Father Michael about this fight.
It was great.
So for our listening audience, yeah, all right. I am an Aikido instructor, but I'm a martial artist. And Andy Kessler this guy came back. I never filmed any of our sparring last year because, people go like, yeah, okay, you're bigger than him. It's going to be easy for you to throw him around, stuff like that. No, that guy pumped weight over the summer. He came back bulked up, and he's a better fighter. So tell me, Father Michael, you're the only one to watch the video. What do you think of it? 4 minutes of fighting with I'm doing Aikido against a Muay Thai fighter.
I thought that, I showed it to my wife too, that, you know, you really hung in there and pressed a great deal. He got a couple good kicks, but high kicks.
Yeah.
But man,
yeah.
your last throw was awesome.
That was it. It took 4 minutes for me to get a good, a really true Aikido throw. The previous year we sparred, all the throws I got on him were more judo throws, okay?
Uh-huh.
But he's talking about, you know, you see, he just laid there on the ground. He's like,
yes,
that
he
was
did.
A pure Aikido. And everybody I sent the video to, I'm like, you're going to have to forgive me for my overreaction. Because after I throw it, I'm doing the Rocky pose. My hands in the air. I got it.
The
kid is good. Go ahead.
Yep. And he's strong. I know. I mean,
he is.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy thinks a lot of you, too. Yeah. He wanted to make sure, because he knows you and our friend. He says, make sure you tell Father Michael. Mike, yeah, I will. So I sent you the video. Yeah, it was good.
But
I'm waiting to hear back from other people on that. Because, okay, for the listening audience, now, there's a debate out there that Aikido is a bullshit martial art, will not work against other forms of martial art. I've trained a couple of my students to box. And, yeah, okay, they're not great boxers, but, you know, a man is fast. And then I went against her. Okay, I'm not going full speed. Yeah, I'm going about like 95% speed. She's still throwing me. Why? Because I'm committing to the attack. But, you know, the first sparring that I did with Andy, now that he's back in school, I couldn't get one. We did a 4.5 minute round. I couldn't get one throw. Now I'm getting in there and I'm getting the clinch, but I can't get the throw. And
you had some good blocks too, Rich. You had some.
Oh,
good
no,
blocks
no.
Too.
The thing is, anybody watches it can tell I'm a martial artist. You know, I move like, look in this video right here. You can see me throwing kicks to his leg. He'll kick me up to kick him back, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And my hands are fast. So, yes, I could, and Andy will admit it, because I'm a boxer, I'm a champion boxer, my hands are far much more so than his. The only reason I throw, if you watch in a video, the only reason I throw a punch is because he's shorter than me, stockier,
mm-hmm.
much more muscular. He's 165 pounds. I weigh 180. but my weight when I was in the Army was 165. So all that extra weight is in my belly. Okay. So anyway, we're about equal. All right. And I'm telling you right now, I asked him about it and he said, I said, so tell, you know, like you're really good. I mean, you're really good. He covers well. He's a damn good fighter. And I asked him about his fighting experience. He said, anybody even close to his weight class, he can beat.
Mm-hmm.
So he trains with guys like 200 pounds, okay? That's what he's used to training with, okay? So the fact that we're probably like muscle mass-wise, not fat, we're fairly equal in size. Now, a year ago, no, but he is definitely bulked up. And he has also improved on his skill. His sparring skill is much better. Okay, that's why I was so excited. I was so excited after 4 minutes of fighting with this guy. I finally got a pure, clear Aikido throw.
Oh yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But
so anyway.
But I thought your endurance and the way you brought it to him, like I said, you had some good blocks, but he had a couple of good high kicks that could have really hurt you, and you were blocking as well. But, yeah, that last throw came out of nowhere, and that was awesome, kind of like a Mike Tyson punch.
actually, okay, all right. Without any, I'm probably going to post that one. I'm waiting for everybody's feedback. Man, I'm telling you, I've been on such a high after that fight. I'm 67 years old. I got in a fight with a senior in college, and that's like I've been on an adrenaline rush ever since. And I only got one throw. I'm sitting there 4 minutes of struggling. I'm like, you can see me. The timing's good. I'll get in there and I'll grab the guy. I wrap my arm around his head, try to take him down. Nothing happened.
Right.
Nothing happened. And then finally, I slip over, I get his wrist, and I have for an Aikido, I have a Nikkyo throw, all right? Now, I will tell you what made it work, because after it was over, we talked about it, and he described it. He said, yeah, I tried to punch you, and you slipped the punch. I'm like, oh, because normally the reason nothing was working, because I grab his wrist, he's pulling it back. But the fact that I grabbed his wrist and he was trying to punch me and knock me out, that made it work. And he told me, he said, yeah, I punched you, you slipped the punch, and I just fell into this empty hole. And I'm like, that is exactly what Aikido is all about.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, everybody I sent the video to, I had to start it off with, forgive my overreaction. I'm doing the Rocky pose. I'm jumping up and down with my hands in here. I got it. I finally got it. I was laughing. And he was too. We had fun. All right. And so there's a steal there. I think I sent it to you. There's a steal where we broke contact, and I'm like light on my feet, and I'm moving away from him, and my hands are down. He's got his hands up in like a really good boxing stance. And the thing I noticed when I was watching the video, and I had to freeze it and do this steel shot from it, is because my jaw was forward. I wasn't even thinking about it, but my jaw is forward. And my hands are down, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I look like I'm really planning to kick this guy's ass, okay? So I did it to him, and I'm going, yeah, the title was See Me After Clap, because remember, he was one of my colleagues. I'm making all these jokes about professors and students, and he sent back a reply and reminded me that on one of the graded things, I dropped him a letter grade. Oh, my God. So I'm probably planning to use it. If I post this on YouTube, and I'm going, if anybody thinks there's any respect between a student and a teacher, just to remind you that I dropped him a letter grade on an assignment, and he wanted revenge from it.
That's right. You have
but Andy's a good. And, yeah. Andy's a really good. I mean, he's a good kid. Great fighter. He's in his senior year, you know, ROTC, and planned to go armor. I, you know, breaks my heart. I wish I could influence him to go infantry or whatever. But hell of a fighter, okay? And in fact, when I was working on, after the, it looked, we hadn't sparred in for a long time. And, I don't think we got to spar any during last spring. So it's probably been close to a year. And so when we sparred the last time, which is the beginning of the fall semester, you know, I'm sitting there with my students trying to get them, here, I need you. We'll get in the clinch. I need you to respond. None of them could fight me the way he did. They had none of the power, the energy, and all that. And I'm like, you know, we're on a new level here, okay? But I was able to work on it, and I was able to get a really good when that throw, that took him down to the ground, and that could have been a submission. Yeah.
That was great.
So anyway,
hopefully
we'll post that one on the – I'm waiting. I've sent it to everybody. Anybody interested in martial arts, friends of mine, I've had a couple replies. And so far as everything's positive, and I will probably post that one on YouTube, okay?
Great.
It will be Aikido V Muay Thai, because the other the other videos I have, sparring with Amanda, is Aikido V Boxing. This one will be Aikido V Muay Thai, and if anybody wants to look that stuff up, and if you have trouble, because not a lot of people check it, just add Killblane, Killblane, Aikido V Boxing Killblane. You'll pull our videos up, okay? And then when and it's probably going to be in the week, because I think this one's pretty positive that we're probably going to post it, right?
Yeah, very very convincing, very compelling.
I told him that too. I said the problem I have with the other two videos is everybody's criticizing the boxer. Oh, yeah, okay, so Amanda, she has no power. I said, yeah, but she has speed. And as soon as I say speed, the conversation ends. But then, believe it or not, you know, so at the end of the first video, I have my bag workout. I have a video of my bag. I filmed it for my students. I didn't film it to show off. I filmed it because I took Amanda to the boxing gym was down the hall from our dojo. Okay, we're training in the community center. So I took Amanda in there. I was showing her how to work out on the bag. And so after the coaching, then I did a bag workout, like a 2.5 minute bag workout. My wife was there to film it, okay? And so, you know, we filmed that to show here's the combinations, here's what you need to work on. So then when I put the Aikido V Boxing video together, I put that on the tail end of it because I know there's people going to, you know, there's all these trolls. They have a limited experience in boxing. And I'm telling you, yes, I've dealt, if you read my responses, yes, you know, all the boxers have this concept of invincibility that boxing surpasses all until they get someone grabbed. Once someone grabs hold of them, that fight is over. Yeah, once you get into a clinch, if you don't know how to grapple, you're in serious trouble, okay? Now, that's why if when this video of me and Andy Kessler comes out, why I have a hard time, you can see where I get him in a great throw, an over-the-hip throw, but he has like 3 years of wrestling and BJJ experience.
Yes.
He's a tremendous grappler. So when I grab him, I'm taller than him. So he's already got a lower center of gravity. So when I grab him, he immediately retreats and sinks, now, last year when we sparred, yeah, I could throw. There was one time I threw him like maybe 7 or 8 feet, all right? But I can't throw him now because he counters it very well. Right. But I got a I got a clear, you know, Aikido is usually identified by joint manipulation, wrist locks and stuff. Now, tonight, I got a wrist lock. It's called a Nikkyo throw. Man, it was perfect. That's why I've been so excited about. But anyway, enough of that conversation. What do we want to talk about tonight?
So I want to talk a little bit about, let's dive into, you mentioned something about the stock market, but let's talk energy right now. Okay, let's talk American energy right now. So I live in West Virginia. Coal mining is just, you know, that's this huge here. And I've noticed a massive increase in coal trains and coal productivity. You do realize that is now supplying the majority of the coal to Europe because of the Russian.
Not just Europe. China.
Yeah, you're right.
China is almost, they are really increasing their energy production, which is coal-based. Yes. Everybody but Americans. Everybody but Americans. Thank you, Biden. Is increasing their coal production. Their coal consumption, that's what I should say.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of, as we were talking about, there's a lot of vitriol out there, but people are suffering. You know, I mean, we're all suffering. Financially, we're suffering. It's not just the gas prices. It's everything. Our retirements are, the potential for Social Security is fastly going away under this current administration. I'm just going to tell you that right now, folks. I'm not trying to scare you, but, you know, when the bottom falls out and the bottom is looking like it is going to fall out, don't expect to be able to retire at 65 or 75 or 80 years old. You know, you're just going to have to work till you die. And I've watched this, the energy industry, you know, obviously I'm a big supporter, and I'll just tell you, I'm a supporter of the coal industry, gas and oil, and nuclear. I am. I just think that there's, you know, in America, we produce the cleanest energy and more cleaner energy than anywhere in the world. Now, it's dependable energy. It's dependable energy. You know, we just saw the effects of Martha's Vineyard getting a little bit uncomfortable. You know, they got a little bit uncomfortable. 50 people showed up. 50 brown-skinned Hispanic people showed up to their doorstep. And they didn't show up to be their maid or butler or their gardener. You know what I mean? They showed up as, and you saw how uncomfortable that they got. As a matter of fact, they got them all out of there. I just read the report, and Kim sent me a link on that as well, where Martha's Vineyard, within 48 hours, they had them on a bus and said, nah, they can't stay here. They got to go someplace else. So they sent them to Cape Cod. So Cape Cod, Martha's Vineyard, that's who did that to you. Just remember that the next time you vote. But I say that because, imagine what they're going to do when they turn their electricity off because there's not enough sun or not enough wind and you don't have those batteries charged up and it's in the middle of the winter or in the dead heat of the summer, and they get uncomfortable. And you won't be able to get gas because, remember, that's a dirty petroleum-based fuel. So we can't have that. So your generator is out. You know, unless they make something to where you can run it off of human pee, you know what I mean? It's just not going to work. So my question is, with the economy the way that it is, with the energy sector the way that it is, how close are we to a serious depression right now? No joke. I want to hear it from you guys.
Well, it's not a depression. It's a recession. The economists have been talking about recession for a long time. Well, There's a number of let me go back and let me kind of give a short overview of my understanding of economy, because when I took economy in college, I didn't understand it, okay? And my brother, he majored in business, and he would try to explain to me how the stock market worked and stuff like that. And I didn't get it. But I'm going to tell you. So I started paying attention to it. And here's what I noticed. Stock market goes up, it goes down. Then it goes up again, and it goes down. It goes up again, and it goes down. It's a roller coaster ride. But you want to know what? Every time it goes down, it goes up again. Now, for our listeners out there, you can just type in the Dow Jones. You can type in, I follow the S&P. So you can just type in S and the symbol for and P, and you'll pull it up. And you can see. You can see it by day, by week, by month. You can see the trends. Now, up until Clinton got elected, I had a mutual fund. This is another reason why I paid attention to the stock market, is because I was looking for patterns, because I lost a lot of money. I had a mutual fund when Black Tuesday hit. And I lost a lot of my investment. By the time I got out of the Army and I cashed in, thank God I cashed in, I had recovered what I invested, not what I was supposed to have earned off the interest, only I recovered what I invested in a little bit more. Okay. So that's the first stock market crash that I had experienced, and I became a very cautious investor. So when I got hired by the Army, and we have our thrift savings plan, which is for most companies like your 401k or whatever, I did the conservative thing. I should have done the risky thing, which had a higher yield, because of my experience at stock market crashes. And yeah, during the time I had my TSP, there was two crashes. There was the tech stock crash, which was like 2001 under Bush. And then there was the real estate crash, the bubble, which again was during Bush. Now, seriously, in all reality, you can't blame Bush for those. These are all self-inflicted wounds by the economy. All right, but both of them happened under, and they were really steep crashes. When I talk about going up and going down, no, every now and then you see this really low spot, a spiral downward. But guess what? When you find, the question is, when the stock, if you want to invest, if you want to buy, sell high, buy low, you want to find out where the bottom of this thing is. Okay, once it hits bottom, guess what? It starts going up. Okay. So I lived through several of these, and then we hit COVID, and all of a sudden the economy shuts down. The stock market pummels downward. There's a sell-off. We hit bottom. Guess what? Once we find the bottom, it starts going up. And guess now, if you go, all of you, and you go and you look on, type in, I do the S&P. Okay, and then go hit max, and you can see it, you know, up and down, but there's almost, you could draw a line through it. It's a steady line until it hits the COVID crash. And then coming out of COVID under Trump, you could say, oh, Biden could claim, no, that now when it's increasing at a higher rate. You can draw a line, okay? So all the presidents could try to claim, no, it goes down, it goes up, but it went up at a higher rate. That's unusual. And then I remember all of a sudden it hit a plateau and it was leveling out. That's when I realized something's wrong. That's not normal. It's not going up. And then it crashed. And then it was ready to crash. It was ready. It was like leveling out. It was nervous. All I can look. Here's the thing: when I watch, like, why it goes down, like, what the hell caused it to go down? It's all psychology. The stock market. These people, they're paranoid. The investors are paranoid. Like, you know, somebody farts in France or whatever, and the stock market crashes. Okay, it's really weird. It doesn't. Everything doesn't have to do with the economy, but. When Russia invades Ukraine and Europe is dependent upon Russian oil, guess what? Yeah, so we have an inflation in America, and now we have a war in Ukraine with Russia. It's crashing. The stock market crashed. Now, it hit bottom. Now, if you look, here's the thing. If you go back and look at all the other patterns, once it finds the bottom, it starts going up. But it ain't. It goes up, but it doesn't stay up. Now, I'm going to tell you, this is a self-inflicted wound. Under the Biden administration, there's all this talk about inflation and recent. Oh God, you know, we just had a few days ago the steepest sell-off decline in the stock market in 2 years. What happened 2 years ago? Well, it's 2002. That's 2022, and it's 2020. Oh, that was COVID. The steepest sell-off since COVID happened a few days ago, all right, all because the inflation numbers came out and that it was higher than expected, that the inflation rate over the last year has been 8.3%, higher than expected. Oh, my gosh. The people that finance, all those workers and stuff, you know, when it comes to the stock market, this is people with surplus cash who are investing in America, who is investing. Yeah, they're greedy. They're greedy. Yeah, that's right. All you people with a 401k or whatever, you're greedy, okay? Yeah, you're investing in the stock market with the hope that you're going to have some cash for your retirement, okay? Well, here's the thing, that the people that really invest their money, they shift it day to day. They are nervous. They are paranoid. Okay, and so when they were, there was a spike all the way up until the announcement that the inflation rate was 8%, and it just took a nosedive. Everything it had gained, the stock market had gained over the last week, lost. In 1 day, and now it's still going down, because I'm trying to remember what they were talking about today. That the thing is, the people that invest in America are nervous about America. They don't trust this Biden administration. Okay, now all these other, yeah, you can sit there like the invasion of Ukraine. Yeah, that's external. The tech stock bubble. That's external. The president has anything to do with that. The housing bubble, yeah, but that's previous presidents that set that trend up, okay? But this the economy we're in right now is very nervous, very paranoid, and that's because of this administration. Because this administration is at war with capitalism. All right, that's all I have to say. So you guys take it over.
Go ahead. I think it's interesting. I'll be teaching on Sunday on stewardship and economics about the unjust steward in Scripture. And there's an interesting book written by a priest, but it's really economics. And my brother-in-law, who just passed, was a big economist. And I just think that there are a lot of factors that make people, like Rich was saying, get nervous, get paranoid, and they'll start selling or they'll start buying, you know, with no rhyme or reason because of the insecurity. And I think part of it is we're trust, okay? The scripture says you can't serve God and mammon, okay? Doesn't mean you can't have mammon, just like we've talked about. That if you live by the sword, you die by the sword, doesn't mean you can't have a sword. And I think it's just a matter of understanding. I think there is a lot of greed. I mean, if you know, even some of the racial problems we're having in our country, it's really not black and white. Even as you were pointing out about Martha's Vineyard, it's really green.
Wait. Let me interrupt you on this one. Okay,
yeah,
so if you're talking about race and greed.
No, I'm talking about money.
Let's talk about BLM.
Planned Parenthood.
No, let's talk. Let me bust on BLM.
Go ahead.
Right?
Okay.
Because the original, when BLM came out, blocking traffic, that's really, really bad. But they regrouped, and I had to applaud them. I had to applaud BLM because they regrouped. They thought it through. They knew what – they learned what tactics pissed people off, like blocking traffic. And they came out better and stronger. Now, the problem is when they came out in the Summer of Love, there was people who hijacked their peaceful protest. So the peaceful protest is in the day, and the rioting and the burning is in the night. Okay, yes, I'll give them that. All right, I will tell you that BLM restructured itself to something that was palatable. Now, keep in mind that during the Summer of Love, when the people that hijacked the protests are burning stores and stuff. Literally, BLM is extorting businesses, and businesses are now investing in BLM to say, hey, we're pro-BLM, so don't burn my store. That's extortion.
Yeah, mafia.
That is, all right, call whatever you want. But when businesses are going like, hey, I'm going to give you money to keep you from burning my store because you're burning stores in neighborhoods, that's called extortion. All right.
Right.
But there's a lot – but here's the thing. A lot of people involved in the BLM movement had honest intentions. Now, so they gave all this money to BLM. Even the members of BLM are suing the organization for corruption. You know, the government came down and said they're found out, like, okay, so they're taking all this money that was invested. All right, James had a show talking about, you know, you need to look at when you invest in an organization, where is your money going? How
right.
much of that money is going into overhead, going in the pockets of people doing the work? How much of it is actually going to the people that it was intended to help? And it turns out that all that money that was invested in BLM was being spent on the lifestyle of the leaders of BLM, which happened to be family members. It's the fucking mafia. That's the mafia,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
BLM
yeah.
became the black mafia, okay?
Mm-hmm.
No other way to describe it, okay? If I'm wrong, tell me. Now, all the rank and file, we had one of those ladies on this show. She's a great.
Right.
And her motivation, yeah, those people are great, just like the FBI. The rank and file of the FBI are all great people, but the people at the top, they've been weaponized. They've been politicized, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
mm-hmm.
that was my rant. Go ahead.
No, just saying, following the green, you're absolutely accurate with that. I mean, that happened with Minister Farrakhan as well with the Million Man March. And, you know, you have this corruption because it really is a class thing, and following the green, not, you know, because you have people like President Obama, you know, who lives on Martha's Vineyard, has nothing to do with black or white. It has to do with green. And we have a great disparity in the country because of that. And like I mentioned, even with Planned Parenthood, you can look at Margaret's.
Oh, wait. Let me, hold on. I just got to echo something I watched on Fox.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, mm-hmm. okay. And for the listeners out there, we have like over 130,000 loyal listeners. And anybody who's listened to me, I usually take the devil's advocate. And what I keep repeating is you can't trust what you hear on the mainstream media because they're all lying to you. But there's a twist here that I thought was funny. Okay. Yes. All right. You know, Obama, him and Michelle come from Chicago. They were paying off their college debt while he was a president. Okay. All right, so they get it all paid off, right? Now they're wealthy, okay? They got a steady income, and they're going to get all this extra money for talks and stuff like that. Now they can live like the rich. So they don't go back to Chicago. So they buy a home in the Alexandria or D.C. area, and they buy another one in Martha's Vineyard. All right, now if you listen to Michelle, all right, this is, I mean, you know, this is the one thing I thought was funny from Fox, and I think it was I. In all honesty, I don't like Tucker Carlson. Okay, he really, you know, he is the polar opposite of Maddow, right? But anyway, so he shows this video of Michelle Obama talking about we'll move into white neighborhoods and white people move out. Okay.
White flight.
Right. So, yeah, the white flight. You're
that's
right.
What
the, that's
yeah.
what she calls
yeah.
the white flight. So what do the Obamas do? They build a home in Martha's Vineyard, which is like, what, 80% white? So
$12 million.
In the context of, go ahead, what?
That's $12 million the home is worth.
Right, right. So the whole concept is the reason the Obamas, President and there's the First Lady of the United States is buying into Martha's Vineyard is to make that community more inclusive, racially inclusive, an 80% white community, the elite, you know, the cost of the housing is so expensive. And now they send 50 illegal Hispanic immigrants from Venezuela. And what, so you say, hey, let's embrace diversity. What does Martha Vineyard do with those illegals? You've already said it. Move them out of town. Move them out of town. All right. 50. Texas is dealing with thousands. Martha Vineyard, this elite community, gets 50 Hispanic immigrants in there and they export them, okay? That is such hypocrisy, okay? But anyway, that's one of the few times I'm going to say, you know what? I think Tucker Carlson got that one right. Most of the time, he just exaggerates. All right, so move on.
Yeah, I'm just saying that we got to follow the money trail. A lot of things are motivated not by compassion. I was mentioning Planned Parenthood because of how lucrative it is. And if you go back to the history with Margaret Sanger and the racism and some of her philosophy, I just think that there's a lot going on here. And look, person works hard. They have a good life. They buy things. They deserve what they've worked for. I don't think we need to have envy, but I do think that there are two different types of worlds, and you get people who idealistically or philosophically, they have all these great ideas until they have to live in that situation. I grew up in the projects in Newark, New Jersey, okay? I mean, we all were poor. There was no white privilege. There was no affirmative action. We were all in the same hole. And initially, those projects were built for veterans, but then they just took everybody. And, you know, it was basically a class thing. It wasn't a racial thing. It was because you couldn't afford to live anywhere else. You're on top of each other. There's so many people on your floor. I mean, it was a real difficult existence. And I just think that there's a great disparity in people talking about helping, and these people are illegal. They're coming, you know, we don't know who's coming in. They're not vaccinated. We don't know what their backgrounds are.
And so something's really wrong with our understanding of compassion. If people were really seeking asylum, that's something different. But it just seems like
they're seeking. Look, the communists, the socialists of Venezuela destroyed their economy, and the Venezuelans want to leave. Where else can, if you look around the world in our hemisphere, where else can you prosper? Where else can you come in with nothing but the clothes on your back and create a better life than the place you just left? Where?
Not Italy.
But the United States of America. Why? Because it's a capitalist country.
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
Right.
They know that. And here's the thing. The Democrats are saying, let's allow all these illegals to come in because they're minorities and they will vote because we're into division and we're into the the Democratic Party has actually become the party of the rural educated elite. That's what they've become. And they've sold out to the money. And they don't represent the minorities anymore. And I will tell you right now. All right. My wife is Hispanic. She's a Hispanic immigrant. And I know lots of Hispanic immigrants. Yes, some of them are Democratic. But I will tell you, the vast majority, let's look at it. They're Catholic, which they're now, not all Catholics are pro-abortion or whatever, but they have conservative out. And here's the biggest thing about Latins. All my Latin friends have come in here. They'll come in here and they'll bust their ass. They'll work two, three jobs and still go to college.
Right.
To better their life. The vast majority of the Latin immigrants that I have personally known, legal and illegal, I've known the illegal ones. I've known some that come in on a visa and extend their work visa. Okay, that's illegal. Okay, but the thing is, they're all hard workers. And guess what? They want to keep their money. They don't want, the Democrats are thinking like, okay, we're going to allow you to come in here and go like this. Yeah, and you're going to vote for us? And they're going like, no, we come into this country and we want to better our lives, which means we're going to work real hard and we want to keep our money. We don't want to pay tax. We don't want to pay taxes to help people that don't want to work for themselves. That's a surprise the Democrats are receiving, that a lot of the Hispanic immigrants are very, especially coming, escaping socialist communist countries, are not in favor of this progressive movement.
Because they're coming out of it. That's a good way
That's
of
right.
framing
They've already
from Venezuela.
Experienced it.
Very
they
good.
Know, like,
That's
we
right.
don't want to live that again. Okay?
Right. No, that's good. That's good. I think that, my grandparents on both sides, my one grandfather, 1898, the other one, 1910, then went back a year later to pick up my grandmother and two aunts. And yes, there's a great opportunity. I personally don't believe, and I know God can do anything, but I would have ever accomplished all that I've accomplished in Italy. If my parents were both born here.
No, you're right. You're right. Someone asked me one. All right. A friend of mine, we're in a discussion, and I was asked, history, would I want to live? Right?
Mm.
And the thing is, I had to say the Old West. Or Ireland during the Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And here's the reason why, because you pick any one of the other times, like, okay, so here I am a warrior, a martial artist. So if I say, no, I'd like to be a samurai in Japan. No, you had three classes, your samurai, you're a farmer or you're artisan, okay?
Mm.
So I'm like, I would really want to be a samurai during this time frame of the shogunate. But what happens if all of a sudden, no, I'm a farmer? I don't have a choice. I cannot go from being a farmer to a samurai. And then?
What did I
say? Right? And then I say, okay, so the Middle Ages, the medieval times, where it's about a warrior class. Well, first of all, you had to be of the warrior class. If you're a peasant, you don't have a choice. You're born into a class. Now, the reason I said Ireland, because in Ireland and Scotland, everybody was a warrior. There was no classes. You proved yourself by your warrior skill. Most of my family descends from the lowland Scots, you know, the Border Reavers, which the interesting study in history. They're all poor, but they're willing to fight for their privilege to be poor. Okay, they do not want to subjugate themselves to anybody. Comfortable life, they would rather be poor and be free. And James Webb, who became one of our Virginia senators and author of I can't remember the book, but it's a really good book about Vietnam. And he wrote a book about how the Scotch-Irish, really are the instigators of the American War of Independence. And it's good. Hmm. You know, it's a very entertaining book. But here's the thing. Okay. So, It's all about freedom. It's all about, you know, standing up for what we believe. So what's your thoughts?
My thought is that, yes, I mean, my grandfather even owned a house. They were both farmers at one. They got married in Italy. And, you know, he worked, and he was a garbage man, and he worked in a factory and bought a big three-family house. And my other grandparents had a big farm in a good part of New Jersey. But I guess my grandfather lost it in a card game and supposedly the crime to retaliate. But what I'm saying is...
That's perfect. That's perfect. That's the whole point is, he was... I love the part about the card game. He was betting his future on the cards he had in his hand. That was his choice. That was his choice. It's sad for the family lost it, okay? And here's the thing I love about the Old West. Everybody that went out west, I don't care what your race was or whatever. No, you were all equal. Man, woman, you were all equal, okay? You had to struggle to survive. And here's the issue, okay? God made man and cult made them equal, okay? And it come down to, all right, if you're talking about gunfighting and stuff like that, who was the best man? Did it matter about your race, ethnicity, and stuff like that?
That's right.
All right, now, there's a lot of prejudice and stuff like that, but seriously, all right, because I come from Ponca City, Oklahoma, and the greatest, all right, one of the great black cowboys of the Old West came from the area I lived in, okay? He invented bulldogging, okay? And,
Is there any truth to the Long Ranger possibly being a person of color that was, you know,
From what I understand, that's all fiction.
Okay.
That's all fiction, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I just, you know, think the character was built on somebody that might have been. But, I think when you're talking about equality, it has to do with tenacity, endurance, hard work, acquiring skill. And, I was the first to graduate college in my family. And yeah. then to go on, and one of my sister's sons received a PhD, but I'm talking about my immediate family. And I just think that I'm hearing what you're saying. I just think that, you know, whatever the philosophy is, you know, in protecting the border, I mean, right away in Martha's Vineyard, they got the National Guard.
Yeah, all right, let me address that. Here's the issue, All right, I applaud the Texas and Florida governors for what they did. Because, first of all, Biden said there's no border crisis. He's been in denial.
Bizarre.
And in fact, a few days ago, Kamala Harris came out, who is supposed to fix the problem, said the border is secure.
Yeah.
And the liberal media has ignored this issue. They have been basically from the left is no border crisis. So look, back when the crisis began, everybody on social media has been joking about it and said, ship those illegals to the blue states. Let them know the reality of it. Finally, you know, all of a sudden the Biden administration and all the governors are all in uproar and they're politicized. All right. I mean, there's accusation of kidnapping, human trafficking.
Right.
Keep in mind, the Biden administration was secretly moving illegals around this country. We don't know where they went and how many of them went there. We only have a few glimpses of the plane. Go ahead.
Plains, New York, Jacksonville, Florida. They were smuggled that night.
No, that's the whole point. We only have a few glimpses. We only know that from the fact of the arrival of the planes. And they all arrived at night. They all arrived at night. So what Newsom, governor of California, is trying to accuse the governor of Florida and Texas, human trafficking, kidnapping, is exactly what the Biden administration has secretly been doing. And the greatest hypocrisy is that today it was reported the Biden administration is sitting down trying to respond, is sitting down trying to figure out how to respond legally to Florida exporting their illegal immigrants who are living on the streets.
Yes.
To sanctuary cities in blue states. States are saying, if you're an illegal, you can come here and live. And now we're exported. Now, here's the thing. This is the weird thing about it. Until Texas and Florida did this, the liberal media was in complete denial that there was a crisis. And now all of a sudden, we're hearing that it's a crisis. It's a crisis in Martha Vineyard. Seriously, think about it. All right, there are daily thousands of illegals pouring into Texas. Thousands of illegals pouring into Texas, and they move. And Florida moves 50 of these illegals to Martha Vineyards, and we now have a national crisis.
Right.
Yeah.
When I sent you the comment by the vice president, you had a funny quip. You said, "Oh, thank God I was concerned about that," or just, you know, being facetious. But she blatantly said the border is secure, and then
I got that from so many sources. I didn't hear her personally say that.
Yeah, I did.
But I've gotten that from so many sources, I'm assuming it's true. All right, we don't have a whole lot of time left. I think there's one more issue we want to address.
Was it the Queen, James? I had a little, like, three-minute thing.
Might be the Queen. What else?
Well,
Yeah, we had the Queen and, of course, the border crisis that we touched on a little bit. But, yes, that's
no,
the
I think
things.
We nailed the border crisis, the hypocrisy of it. It's a crisis. Here's the thing. Here's the thing. We now know whether you're listening to Fox or you're listening to CNN, you now know there's a border crisis. The border crisis might be in Martha's Vineyard of Massachusetts, or it's on El or Eagle Pass, Texas, okay? But we now know we have a border crisis, okay? All right.
Mm. Okay. So, yes, if you'd like to go into the discussion about the Queen, and I will tell
I just
you.
Have a,
yeah. I wanted to just kind of set this up. The other thing was Father was Father Calvin Robinson.
Yeah.
We
were
going to talk a little bit about
it.
Yeah.
That's
all right.
Right.
So go ahead, Father Michael.
I wrote a little something. It's like three to 4 minutes. Is that okay?
Yeah,
it's just
absolutely.
A personal encounter. Okay.
Hey, the rest of the time's yours, man.
All right. I never saw the Queen, even from a distance, in all the years that I spent in England. However, I did see her from about a 10-foot distance at the College of William & Mary while working with the police department. I served as the chaplain for the William & Mary Police Department for many years. Queen of England was visiting, and the Vice President of the United States was only a few miles away in the same city of Williamsburg, Virginia. I was fulfilling my chaplain duties, wearing clerics with my badge on my jacket pocket. It turns out that three state police did not show up to take their post to guard a low wall. When the CIA discovered this, they appointed me to that spot. After guarding the spot for many hours, or at least it seemed that long, we were directed into the yard again next to the college. I was about 10 feet from the Queen, Elizabeth II, when she passed by our section. She stopped to talk to one of her subjects, who was a soccer coach at the college, and I could readily hear her conversation about some professional football team in the United Kingdom whom she said that they thought that she brought them luck. Can't remember team, and if I did mention the name that I vaguely remember, it would be conjecture. Perhaps there are Brits who would know the team that Her Majesty was referring. I was struck by the beauty of the Queen, a woman who was at that time in her 80s. Prince Philip did not join her that day. He had other commitments in the area, perhaps at the shipyard. He was a Navy man, as is well known. To the best of my recollections, it was around the time of the Virginia Tech shootings, because the governor was also present and many other high-level dignitaries that I was privileged to meet and to greet. Having seen her so close, and when all of this has taken place, you almost feel like you met her, you know. So, and of course, I know her history. I know her faith. Mm-hmm. And it was really a very personal thing to me because I had the opportunity to guard her and also to be that distance and hear her speaking to someone else.
Actually, the thing that has always impressed me about the Queen, and that is because I'm a military historian, is before she became the Queen, she was the Prince,
mm-hmm.
and it was World War II. She served. Now, the whole royal family serves, right? But I love everybody that posts pictures, and you are mm-hmm. you're guilty of it, Father Michael.
Yep.
Post pictures of the future queen of England as in uniform. She was a vehicle mechanic. He was vehicle mechanic. One of the pictures I really enjoyed someone posted was, I forgot the rock band, all right, Pink Floyd. Yeah, it was like one of the members of Pink Floyd. They're old. And it was him, and it's his automobile collection. And he's standing next to the Queen, and she's pulling oil, okay? I'm sitting there going, like, if you didn't know her background, the fact that she was a vehicle mechanic during World War II, and she sat there with this guy, this rock star, because she loved knighting rock stars, okay? Elton John and YouTube, Beatles. All those guys. Yeah. And the thing is, here she is. Here's this guy's private automobile collection, and she's like checking the dipstick on it, okay? I love that. That's, you know, I'd never seen that photo. I've seen the other photos of her as a World War II in uniform, and she's adorable, and, you know, as a mechanic and stuff, but that one nailed it. That once you're a mechanic, you can't get that out of your system, okay?
Right.
I'm sure she's going over a visit with this guy, and he's like, hey, you want to see my car collection? She's going, I used to be a mechanic. Here, let me check the oil. Okay.
The other priest is a Brit as well, so that might be a good transition, James. James, the priest you were talking about that took the stand?
That would be Father Calvin Robinson. And Father Calvin Robinson, we've got just a little bit of time. I've actually been communicating with him on Twitter, and he's just an interesting, you know, wonderful person that that posts just some amazing things. So it's Father Calvin Robinson, and he is an Anglican, and he has a TV and a radio presenter. He's a conservative commentator, and you can learn about him at Calvin Robinson. That's all one word, CalvinRobinson.com. He catches a lot of flack. You know, he talks about the World Economic Forum and the dangers with that and some of the things that are going on with that. He also really came out on a anti-gay LGBTQ. Now, he explains it that he is not opposed to having their own lifestyle, but he is opposed to being, you know, forced to accept it as normal and okay. And he came out, you know, with a biblical stance, a conservative biblical stance on that. And, you know, they lost their mind in the UK over that. So he's been on several Fox News shows. He's been on CNN, you know. But he's – I think they're never going to have him on CNN again.
All right. We covered this at our – I think our last show, okay? Anybody wants to go back and listen to it. And I made a comparison between the alphabet group, because it's LBGQ, but it's, I think they added the T to it. So I just refer, they keep adding so damn many letters, I call them the alphabet group. All right. I made a comparison between the alphabet group and the rise of the Catholic Church. So there's a period of time where you go through persecution to acceptance. And that's what you really want, is acceptance. And then you become dominant, all right? And from that time on, you excommunicate anybody who disagrees with you. And the Catholic Church did that for a long time. And that is what we're seeing with the Alphabet Group. So anybody who criticizes the Alphabet Group, LGBTQ, you get excommunicated.
Oh, no, you
get
your
livelihood. And you know, you know, the thing is, the irony of it all is that group, all they wanted was acceptance. We just want to be able to accept, if we look at it from a humanistic experience, everybody should be accepted for who they are, for what they want.
What happens, Rich, is the oppressed become the oppressors.
That's right.
Not
enough. I like the way you described it. Because I just look at as those who were guilty of intolerance become the intolerant.
Yes, that's right. It's not enough to just say, okay, we're accepted. Now we have to dominate, and you have to experience
that's right.
What
that's
we
right.
Experience.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, that's where we are in agreement. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true. It's unfortunate.
We had a whole show about that last week, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's still a mess. I will tell you that. So we don't have much time. We've only got like 5 minutes left here. So any parting commentary before we get off the show and have Father Mike pray?
Well, we're looking at doing some kind of a transition and some kind of a project that I would like to share with the listeners when we're closer to it to get some prayer support or any other kind. Just thrilled to be back. I was away at my brother-in-law's funeral, who used to pray regularly for our show. But I'm eager to say a prayer because we do have a lot of problems in our
right. Hey, Father Michael, let me ask you in a couple minutes to describe this. All right, so we all talk about prayer. So, look, 30% of our listeners are probably going to church. All right, and mm-hmm. the majority probably don't even believe in this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What evidence is there that the power of prayer actually works?
Well, there have been studies. I mean, even Harvard did a study with heart patients without telling them. There are studies that have shown, I know from 50 years of experience, how important prayer has been. And I would just challenge anyone to just try it, just to say
No, you say that.
There.
No, when you talk about studies, I remember reading one of those studies. That they did a study and they had people pray for patients who were ill and then the others who didn't. And they found that there was a significant improvement in the people who were prayed for. Now,
when I got the sepsis, the doctor said to my wife, he's Superman. I knew, Rich, everybody was praying for me.
Yeah.
And I got up the next day. You know,
all right. But here I'm going to tell you, how many times have I prayed for people and they died? Like Ron. Okay?
If they're believers, that was a promotion.
Well, no. Here's the thing. Like Ron, and I miss him. Okay. The thing is, we all have our expiration dates.
That's
all right.
Right.
We all have an expiration.
We're finished.
Now, some of us, it's negotiable. But, there's a time that we are not here on the earth to live forever. We are here to prepare ourselves for the next life, to meet our Maker. Okay? And so I believe I can pray my ass off, and the people I'm praying for are still going to meet their expiration date. But there's
Jen
some people.
James want me to pray.
There's some people.
Let me pray because we only have a minute.
Go ahead.
Okay? James wants us to pray. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Lord, I bless our audience. I bless our team. I thank you for this great opportunity. Lord, we weep for our country. We weep, Lord God. We mourn because we see so much brokenness. Heal our land as we humble ourselves and pray. I ask these things in Jesus' name, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. All right, folks, we're down to the last minute and 20 seconds. I just want to say thank you to all you listeners out there. Thanks for hanging with us. You know, we continue to get new listeners, so that is hope for this country. We're not running people off. We're here to just tell it just a little bit different. We're not biased like the media. We don't do stories. We just tell it like it is. So, you know, God is good, folks. God is so good. And I pray for each and every one of you as well.
And I say to each and every one of you on here, God bless you. God bless America. And good night, everybody.
Good night, James and Rich.
Good night, Father Michael.
All right, good
night, Rich. God bless you guys.
Thank you.